All right, we're starting at the bottom of Pei Vav Amud Bet. There's where we left off with the statement of Rabban Shmuel about when we sell an item in its entirety or its completion, then the transaction is not done until that unit, that full unit, is put into the measure. Whereas where if someone sells something on a unit basis, on a per unit basis, then as each one of those marks is met, I mean each one of those units is met, then the sale is complete for those number of units that are now in the medida that have been measured out into the pot. So the Gemara brought one challenge from Tosefta to that position. And at the end of yesterday, I forgot to mention also that the Rashbam and Tosfot also discussed why the Gemara did not ask from the Seifa of the Tosefta. I mean, the Gemara asked from the ratio of the Tosefta, which is that if you pour it into one of their measuring, or one of their units, or one of their kelim, then rishon, right, kana, that each one, as you go along the way, each unit mark that you've met, then you're kone. So the Gemara says, oh, the case here is a unique case where it was a hin that had markings for each of the lugim along the way. But the Gemara could have asked from the Tosefta. The Tosefta also has another case in the Tosefta, is where you put it into Bershut Lokeach, Kemish Kibilav Mocher, Kana Lokeach. Right, so the why isn't that also a question for the Gemara? So the Tosos and the Ashbam ask, answer this problem or deal with this issue in a different in different ways. The Ashbam says that the Seifa is not relevant. So if you just look it down in the Ashbam here, it's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the bottom. It says, "Va'ad kaporech basfarim shelanu miseifa diktani b'shut lokeach kemet shekibel lav pircha hiklal." That's not a question. Over there, the whole amount is found in the Reshut HaLokeach. Once the whole amount is in the Reshut HaLokeach, then it doesn't matter how much he's going to take in the end. Whatever they agree to that he's going to take is already in his possession. So even though they measure out Rishon, they didn't measure out each Sa'ah. Say, for instance, he puts a core there and he only wants to buy 15 Sa'ah, half of the core. I realize when the core is in his property, then the 15 sa that he wants already are in his possession automatically once you set the transaction in place. So that's why the Rashi says it's not relevant, it's not a question at all. Tosos disagrees, and he says, no, the reason that the Gemara doesn't ask from the Seifa is because it already asked from the Reisha. And Ochanami could have asked from the Seifa. The Seifa is a relevant case as well. Gemara just said, all right, we'll take it from the front end of the Tosefta. So they just dealt with the first question possibly they could get from the Tosefta, and then they could have had another question from the Tosefta. Once they answered the first question, you can answer the second question the same way you answered the first question. That the situation, here is a situation where you have a hin that has marking of Lugim along the way. So just a follow-up from yesterday, to finish up from yesterday. Now the Gemara begins in the second last line of Pei Vav Amud Bet, another proof. Tashma, a sucher tapu'el asoti molag goren hayom bedinar. So a person who hires a worker to work with him in the Goren, and the Goren meaning at the time of the harvest. Now, this is in Nisan. He's doing this before the harvest has started. He's doing this in he's trying to prepay to lock in a worker. Now, when he pays the worker, he's paying him a dinar per yom. On the other hand, the Goren, yafes sela. On the time, if he was to hire such a worker at the time of the Goren, it would cost him a sela per yom. So over here, he's paying him a dinar per yom, so he's getting a huge discount because he's prepaying, right, for the work over here. So if he prepays for him and he buys him up front, then buys his work. He says, listen, I need you to work for 30 days during the Goren, dinar per yom. So then that's the agrees. The worker says, fine. Then when it comes to the Goren, you go out to hire workers and they're going at a sela per day. So now the Gemara says, asur la'anotu imenu. You can't do this. Why? Because this is agar natar. This is basically looks like because I am lending him the money, because I'm giving the money up front to pay for him, he's discounting his wages to me. Because had I paid him at the time of the Goren, I would have to pay him significantly more. But because I'm paying him up front, I'm paying him in a couple of months in advance, therefore I'm getting a discount. There's the equivalent of, right, some sort of imputed interest that I'm assigning to him, and we're discounting the value of his services because I'm giving the money up front. So that looks like a agar natar. Aval, on the other hand, im sachro mi ayom bedinar liyom, if he hires him from today, starting at this moment, on a dinar per yom basis, the goren yafes sela, whereas when he reaches the goren, he's also, again, the same thing that he's worth a sela per day. Nevertheless, here it's mutar. Over here, it's okay. So in this instance, if he hires him right away and he prepays for his work going through, that's okay because we don't consider it a loan anymore. We consider it to be, right, his wages. Since he's starting to work immediately, it's as if you're starting to pay him his wages out and he's earning his wages along the way. Now, Gemara says, if you think that this principle of Rav and Shmuel applies, that when you purchase a 30 sa'ah, a kur, and he defines for you that what it is, it's a sa'ah per sa'ah. One, each sa'ah is going to be worth a sa'ah. Ani mor chalecha, rishon rishon kana. Then in that instance, each moment you're koneh. Therefore, hachanami. Why don't we say the same thing over here? Kama, kama, mifsak, pasak. Right? Why don't we say the same thing over here, that as he's going along, that each day is, he's offering him a dinar per yom. If he offers him a dinar per yom, then it's not like he hired him for a fixed salary, right, all the way through from now till the go-rin. It's he's saying to him, listen, I'm paying you a dinar per day. That means that each, if you think like Rav and Shmuel, when I offer you a unit price, that means that each unit is a separate entity or a separate transaction. So too over here. When I offer him a dinar per yom, even though I'm hiring from today, I'm paying him a dinar per yom, which means each day is an independent transaction or an independent wage. If that's the case, then we're in the same problem. When I prepay all his wages up front, even though he's working from today, I'm still basically lending him money because I'm prepaying for his services, and his services are going to be earned on a, you know, one per one basis, on a daily basis.
So I'm going to assume that paying someone's wages is interchangeable with buying or, you know, selling a product. They're not the same.
Well, not if you were to do it in a manner which offers him a salary over a period of time, you're right. But in the sense that you're paying him on a per day basis, when you offer him a per day rate, that means that he can walk at any point. I mean, this individual that you've hired till the go rent, and you're saying, like, dinar per yom, if he wants, he can back out after any given day. Because you have not, there is no assigned salary over the whole period of time. It's a per unit basis, a daily wage. Right, it's a schir yom. If he's a schir yom, he can walk away after any day. If he can walk away after a day, it means that each day is a separate transaction. I'm saying, you don't have to compare them identically, but they seem to be functioning in the same way. That if I offer a per unit pricing, it should be that each unit is separate. If each unit is separate, then how can I prepay for a salary up front when he hasn't earned those units that are going to be in the go rent? That means I'm paying him less because I'm paying him up front. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, come, misak pasak, vasulay no bimeno. Shouldn't be able to do it.
Of Kenyan, so he should be able to be
Chozer until he reaches, right, the 30th sa'ah. Exactly. That would be the equivalent here. So Gemara says, it should have been, right, if that's the case, come, misak pasak, vasulay no bimeno. And we have, it says, midarli yom, ulugorin yofesela, mutar. Why is it mutar? Am I? Vayagar notarli yu. It's exactly that. He's basically offering him to take prepayment of the salary. Prepayment of the salary is offering him a huge discount on the wages to get that prepayment, which is basically saying, because you are, basically, I'm giving you the money up front, for the benefit of having the money up front, I'm going to pay you less. That is the equivalent of agar natar. It's the equivalent of paying interest, right, to have the loan. So, amarovo, betisbiro. Wait a minute. Does this make any sense? Which is Shaul's question. What are you talking about? A person can hire themselves out at any wage they want. Right? Just because a person has a choice to hire themselves out at whatever they feel is a just wage. There's no obligation or no fixed wage. I mean, they're willing, even if the market price is so such and such, you can go ahead and discount yourself to the market price. Nobody says that's not, right, proper payment.
Why do you consider it a garnatah?
Right. Meaning that this is just schirut. That's it. Schirut is not defined by what the market price is. Schirut is defined by what I'm willing to accept. And that was the difference, I think, Shaul, what you were pointing out. There is market price by schirut is different than market price by metaltlin. By objects, you can claim that the market price determines what the price is. Then you have ona. If you move too far away from that market price, you have ona. But schirut, that may not be the case. You have to listen to the Lashon Rashbam here. I'll read you the Lashon Rashbam. It's amazing. He says... Rashim says, about schar tircho. It's towards the end of the one, Vetizbara. It's about midway through the Rashbam Vetizbara. He says, about schar tircho shel adam. It's opposite where it says Gemara in the Gemara. It says, about schar tircho shel adam, leka agar natar li. Dederech poel askir etzmo b'chol shuhu.
Generally.
Right? He would do it. He has nothing to eat. He's willing to take any wage just to have something on his table. So there's no such thing as a market price for wages. Anything he gets from the balabait, that's a benefit, that's profit to him. So first, right, it's better than nothing. Now, first of all, that it has major implications what the Rashbam is saying. Number one, no ona here. Just like by karkaot, the way, right, the Rashbam talk about go, there's no ein ona karkaot, is because karkaot people are willing to pay any price, or, you know, I mean, there's no real value you can assign to karka because it's different for each person and people are willing to pay excessive prices or take discounts to get rid of their real property. They want to be liquid. So over there, there's no ona. Same thing over here. Because people are willing to accept any sort of wage because, right, they just need something to eat. Therefore, there's no longer ona by wages because there is no market price in the end. And the market price is basically what anybody would accept. If they accept it, that becomes the market price. The other very, very interesting thing here, and it's not the topic of the daf, I point it as an aside, that Tosfos here says that, I mean, Rashbam here says that whatever you earn from your work is revach hu etzlo. Which is interesting when it comes to masrot, for instance, or maaser ksafim. That means, or the underlying assumption here, is that your maaser yadayim have no value. Your maaser yadayim have no inherent value. Therefore, anything you do is revach hu etzlo. As opposed to metalklin, if you were to buy and sell property, I would assume the property has a basis. You purchase the property for a certain amount, and then you sell the property at a higher amount. Your profit is the difference between what you bought the house for and what you sold the house for. Nobody suggests that your profit is the entire sale price of the house, because it costs you money to put the house together. Over here, what the Rashbam is indicating, and that's what we pay Masro today, when we pay Maaser Ksafim, I mean, it's only a Dindra, you know, it's a Minhag, it's not, maybe not even Dindra Abonon, it's a Minhag today that we pay Maaser Ksafim, but when we pay Maaser Ksafim, you go to work, you get a salary, and when you get your salary, we don't deduct the fact that your Maaser Yadayim is worth something. You gave up your time, you worked to earn this money, we assume that everything you earn is Revach. There is no cost basis for the work that you do. And therefore you pay Maaser Ksafim an entire amount, leaving out taxes, right, which may never have been yours, right, which aren't yours at all. But you get no deduction for your expenses or your time or whatever you've committed here. That's this line of the Rashbam. The Rashbam says that anything you do with Maaser Yadayim, Revach Hu Etzlo. It's all profit. Or the other way around, if you have the fact that you work and you earn money with your hands and giving up your time should have a basic, they should have a cost. And therefore, you should only get the profit above what's considered a standard cost for your time. I don't know what that standard is. I mean, that's a very hard determination, but there should be some basis. It's not like you're doing, you're just, you know, you're not, you're sleeping in your bed and all of a sudden they're paying you money. That's not what happens. You have to actually go to work to earn the money. So that's why it's a, right, it's an amazing statement. All right. So I'm back to the Gemara. Now.
I'm not sure that they see why the first case is different.
Right, so that's Gemara's question. Very good. Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. According to you, Rabbah, if Zazulei Schirot, right, is the opportunity of any individual to take lesser pricing, then why is the Reisha and the Seifa any different? Just like you're asking, Shul. Reisha, Deloka Ovid Bahadei Mahashta Mechse Ki Agar Natar. The answer in the end is there is no Agar Natar here. We're not talking about a Doraisa issue anymore. We're looking about Marasayan, things that look bad. So now, if you do not start working today, then it's mechse ki agar natar. It looks like you're giving him money up front, and then he's paying you back. I mean, that you're paying him at a dinar per yom, so you give him a big loan, and then he comes back and he pays you back at a sela per yom. He's paying you back. For every dinar you gave him, he's paying you back a sela, basically. So it looks like agar natar. Sefer, t'kavi ba'adei ma'ashta. Over here in the sefer, where he starts working immediately, lo mechse ki agar natar. It does not look like agar natar. So the answer in the end is, you're right, Joel. There is no difference between the ratio and the sefer. Neither case is a problem of agar natar, because the principle that Rav establishes that tzchirut is the choice of the individual who is maskir himself, right? If you're maskir, so you have a choice to pick whatever demei tzchirut, you can pick whatever rate you want. That's your prerogative. And there is no ana, there is no, right, agar natar li. In the end, what's the difference? The difference is what it looks like. It looks bad. It's not. This is like a marasayan or a mechsek agar natar. So it's a dinder abonon. That by the ratio we say don't do it because it looks like you're lending him money to get more back in the end. In the seifa, where it's clear that he starts to work today, it doesn't look like a loan. It looks like you're compensating him. You're paying a salary. Right now, maya mechuba the karko v'talash koshu kana. So we said, this is back from the Mishnah, and it's a long time ago, but the Mishnah said that when you're picking pishtan, if he tells you to buy pishtan, if you start to pick, as soon as you start to pick, you're koneh everything that's there. So Gemara wants to know, what's the case here? Mishum the talash kosher kono? Just because you pick one thing means you get the whole field? Meaning that he's not offering you the field. How are you kone over here? The only way to be kone over here is al gab karka. Right? It's by having you take possession of the karka. By taking possession of the karka, you'd also take possession of all the other items that are mechuber the karka. But just because you cut one thing out of the field, then why does that give you rights to the karka? And why does that give you possession of everything else that's in the field? Doesn't make so much sense. So Amar Rav Sheshes Hachu Maskina, the case is here. Amar Lei, Leich, right? Yafel Lecha Karka. So he says to him, go and make an improvement in the karka kol shehu. Make one little improvement in the karka. V'koni, then you'll be kol mashallah. Then you'll acquire everything that's on it. So what he's basically offering him over here, there are different ways to phrase it. I'll show you the Rashbam, the Tosfos phrases it slightly differently over here. But the basic premise is that we know that there is kinyan by karka. A kinyan by karka can be done by kinyan chazaka, which is no godar paratz. Or if you make some improvement in the property, that's what right. That's what the idea of now gadar paratz. You do something that exerts ownership, or you make some slight improvement in the property that allows you to make a chazaka on the property by going in and making an improvement. So basically, what he's offering him here is just make some improvement. You're clearing out an area now that could be plowed. You're harvesting, you're clearing up something, you're cleaning up a piece of the area, you pick something out, you're doing something that improves the property. By making the improvement in the property, you're making a kinyan. A kinyan on what? That's the question here. The way the Rashbam phrases it over here, what I'm offering you here is that if the... I'm offering you some sort of a possession of the property, that the... Masnisan Ashminan, our mission comes to teach us, the Chesked Karka Mahani the Pishtan, Afagavdo Zavin Layara. It works for the Pishtan even though he didn't sell you the land. She says that a Chazaka Kala, like a small Chazaka, like picking Pishtan, gives you the right to acquire everything that's Mechuba the Karka. Because the Mocher says, pick the Pishtan, and the Karka will be improved by that. And based on that, I'll give you some sort of Zchiyah in the Aro. I'll give you some sort of possession in the Aro. In order to acquire the pishtan that's on it. And Tosu says a similar idea. He says, Teishu'ula lecha. I'll lend you the property. So Tosu's phrased it as a borrowing of some sort. I'll lend you the property. If you make this chazaka, this will be a kinyan for the she'ela that I'll lend the property to you. And the lending of the property is simply to acquire everything that is on it. So that's the way it doesn't phrase it. The Rashbam seems to indicate it's more of an acquisition. I'll give you rights in the property to acquire what is on it. I mean that I'll give you those rights. You're actually getting some right. He's offering you a right in the karka to be called the mashallah. Not rights to the karka, you don't own the karka, but he gives you this right, which you're able to acquire by picking it. That is, that this karka will function as your right vehicle for a kinyan. That's why there is. Right, next Mishnah. Person sells wine or oil to his friend and the price fluctuates. If the before you finish filling up the measurement that you bought, it belongs to the mocher, meaning that the benefit or detriment here belongs to the mocher. Once it's full, and now belongs. That's the, I mean, the pivotal point where the transaction changes hands is at the time when the measurement has reached its fullness. Right? Now, with the Gemara will ask.
Are you assuming that money has changed hands already?
Okay.
Or they just agreed on the price?
Right. It seems like they've agreed on price. That's got to be the situation. We've seen this before over and over again, that they've agreed on price. That all these cases are cases where we know that there is money. Otherwise, there's nothing to talk about. So the assumption here is that they fixed the price. We'll have to discuss why. What's the case here? Because we saw before in the Tosefta that it depends whose keli it is. It's a keli mocher. Then it never leaves the hands of the mocher. If it's a kli lokeach, it never leaves the hands of the lokeach. So what's the mishnah talking about? So that we have to deal with. If there is a middleman, a broker between them, then nishbara chavit nishbara l'sir sur. Then the sir sur now gets in the middle. Then if it breaks while he's dealing with it, while he's handling it, it's breaking for the sir sur. Now the way the Rashbam reads it is because the sir sur is not the shliach of the lokeach. He's transacting for himself over here. He's making money. He transacts here to make money. If he's transacting to make money, he takes possession of the merchandise and then sells it on. Right? So he becomes like a lokeach, basically. That's right. He becomes like a klef mer.
He's the wholesaler.
Right. So Tosus doesn't like that. Tosus says, well, then he's a lokeach. What are you talking about? So Tosus says that's not the case. The sirsur over here is not because he takes possessions of the item, but the Rivam explains that the sirsur is a modet. He measures, like all sirsurim do, and he takes profit, or he takes money for doing the medidah. So since he does takes money for doing the mibidah, then right, the lokeach, say the lokeach pays him for going. It's basically he's hiring someone to find something for him. But the lokeach, this individual who does the measuring, gets compensated for doing this measuring. That fee now makes him responsible for the medida, the bucket that he's using or the utensil he's using. If there's an onus, he would be patur. But if it's no onus, then he's going to be chayab. That would be the nafkamina between the two shitot. According to Rashbam, when you take possession of the item, doesn't matter if it's an onus or not an onus, your response, it's yours. And when you lose it, it's your money that you lost. You're out the money. You either got to pay for whoever you bought it from, or you're not going to get the money from the lokeach. You're out your money. Then the way the Rambam is explaining it, only if you're not an onus are you responsible. If you're an onus, you're just working on a fee basis. A fee basis, right. You're not a... There, you were some sort of, you're working on behalf, for the fee, on behalf of one of the individuals. And therefore, if you're an ones, you would not be chayav. But if you're not an ones, then you are chayav.
What are you? You're a mazik.
Right. At that point, you become a minus. And that might be Tosas Shitato and other places, which is that even though Adam is chayav, we say Adam a mazik is chayav no matter what, Tosas says the Shita that by pure ones, there is such a concept that Adam is patur. She tells us as a shita, as opposed to the Rambam and others, that when pure ones by a mazik, that you are a patur. We saw that a number of times. We saw it in Babu Kam. We saw that in Bava Metzia.
What is this? It's not like that the Rambam's right. Even though he's making
it
more complicated.
He says, then why does it say nishbura? Right, he says, why do you have to say nishbura? The Mishnah said that the price fluctuated in the first half of the Mishnah. That's how it says. Ownership matters because price fluctuated. Now, if you want to say the same thing by the seersor, that he takes possession of it, then you could describe the problem of him taking possession as price fluctuation. Who gets the benefit of, or the detriment of the price fluctuation? The fact, right, the seersor. The fact that the Gemara, the Mishnah changed and said Nishbira, tells you that something else happened here by the Seer Sur. That's not a price, that's not simply about ownership, it's a problem at Nishbura. Nishbura becomes the problem and not price fluctuations. And he said that's an indication that we're talking about a different issue over here by the Seer Sur.
What does the Rashbam say about price
fluctuations? He doesn't address that. I was thinking about it yesterday, I said, what would the Rashbam say? The Rashbam would say that the Seer Sur doesn't hold on to it long enough. Two, the whole idea of Seer Sur and Gemara is that he gets rid of it fast. He unloads it. It's within the day, he's unloading it. So price fluctuations are not really his issue. He holds on to it too short a period. He's making a profit just on the margin of moving it between two parties. And his idea is not to make money on the fluctuation of prices. I think that's what the Rashbam will have to answer. All right, so now, Nishbara Chavit, Nishbara Seer Sur, so that's what we just said. V'chayav latif lo shlosh atipim. At the end, this is, seems like anybody, when you pay somebody, you give them, or the chenvani, or somebody gives them wine, or sells them the oil, you have to tip it over at the end, and have three drops come out of it. That's how you know it's empty. It's empty when the last three drops come out. Hirkino mitzit, if he lights it on its side, many times when you light something on its side, you think like, you do some ketchup, or any other body, you lean it, turn it upside down for a while, and all of a sudden it gathers a little more that you couldn't get out before, it wasn't there. Same thing, if you light the barrel on its side, and all of a sudden, you know, some wine or some oil gathers over there, arusha mocher, remains with the mocher, because we assume that the buyer is miayesh. He's not going to wait around to get the rest of the item. That's already, it was embedded in there, it's going to take a day or two for it to settle, and he doesn't worry about it. V'chenvani enu chayav latif, shlosh tipim. The chenvani doesn't have to drop out the last three drops, because he's busy. He's got customers coming here, he doesn't have to stand around, wait for the last three drops to come out. That already is considered to be too much of a burden, and the buyers are mochel on those last three drops. That he's only patur when it's Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, because then he's in a rush. Otherwise, he's chayav. The question of who Rabbi Yehuda is addressing is a different. We'll have to see in the Gemara. Right? Ha, midah deman. Gemara wants to know in our Mishnah, who does the midah belong to? Now, ilim midah the lokeach, if it belongs to the buyer, achelon mitleit midah the mocher, until it's full, it belongs to the mocher, midah the lokeach. It belongs to the midah, it's the lokeach. He gets it as it's being filled up. He's taking possession of it as it's filling up. The midah of the mocher. Now, what do you want to suggest? It's the midah of the mocher. Mishnah lemeitz midah lokeach. Right? Midah of the mocher. How can you say when it's full, it belongs to the lokeach? It belongs to the mocher. You never change possession, never change hands. You can't have it belong to the lokeach yet. So, what's the answer? Amar Rabbi Yiloh, the midah tzirsur. The case is that it belongs to a third party. It doesn't have to be tzirsur. It's a lav davka tzirsur, but any third party. The midah does not belong to the buyer or to the seller.
That's it.
It was a separate case. So his question, it's Michlal, what would you think? If the Seifa is talking about a Sirsur, that means that the Reisha, Michlal the Reisha, loves Sirsur Eskina. It's not talking about a Sirsur. Exactly your question, Shaul. So the Gemara says no. Reisha b'mida below Sirsur. The Reisha is a case where I'm just talking about a third party measuring unit. But there's no Sirsur there. He's not overseeing it. The Sirsur is not involved at all. He just lent them a measuring cup or a measuring barrel. Right? Seifa b'sirsur atzmo. It's when he's involved. The Sirsur is atzmo. So then, if that's the case, right, either going to Rashi, Sirsur atzmo means that he's involved, he's taking possession. According to Tosfos, Sirsur atzmo means he's doing the measuring. It's not that one of the parties, the mocher, is doing the measuring, but the Sirsur is actually involved in the measuring in this case. That's right. So that's exactly the Rashi. All right, but then you're missing, then why is it only Ashi Mikmalet? That doesn't seem to be the pivotal point. And the Rashi says, if what you're saying is true, right, then you could say, once you're in Kimta, you say, oh, it's the Kli of the Lokeach in the place of the Mocher, the Gemara should have brought earlier this as a proof. The Gemara never brings this Mishnah as a proof. When the Gemara had the question, Kli Lokeach B'shut Mocher, the Gemara never brings this Mishnah. The fact that the Gemara doesn't bring the Mishnah is indicative of the fact that this Mishnah is not talking about that case. If it was talking about this case, the Gemara should have brought that as a proof. Even though they could have answered what you answered, which is that the Mocher only gives it to at the end. But the Gemara would have to bring the question in order to answer that way. The fact that the Gemara never brings it is indicative of the fact that that's not the case. Right? Rezer went up to Eretz Yisrael. Ashkei leziri. He's found ziri. Amar lei mikan tono de achinei rav midot. Who here was taught by Rav Midot? Midot doesn't mean the Masechet Midot, right? But measurement, like our here. So now the question here: there's a Machlokas a Girsa. The Rashbam has the Girsa, which we have in our Gemara. He changed the Girsa. That is Atnei Rav. Rav taught this individual, whereas the original Girsa and the Girsa that Tosfos wants to uphold is that Litnei Rav, that Rav was taught by, right? That he was taught by. That he's the one who taught Rav. The reason it has to do with is that the Gemara now continues with Amar Rava, we're going to see, and other individuals, which seems to indicate that it's long after Rav, these are generations after Rav. So obviously if you're asking who Rav taught, and he's going to speak to this individual, right, it seems that what we're talking about here is Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime. That's what the Gemara says. He points to Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime. When he points to Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime, Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime is a peer of Rava. If he's a peer of Rava, then how could it be that he taught Rav something? He's after Rav, so it must be that Rav taught him. So that's why the Rashi changes the Girsa. Rabbeinu Tam does his famous thing that he does in other places. Shnei Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime. There were two different Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime. There's Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime, who was a peer of Rava. There's also Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime, who was a Talmud of Rebbe. He's a Talmud of Rebbe, and he's the one who taught Rav. So again, the question of whether it's the person who taught Rav or that Rav learned from, right, is a question of how you look at this Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime. It's not, no nafkamina to the case, but Amalei, Maika Kashalicha says, what's your question? All right, go ahead, tell me. It says the Tanan, Irkino, Mitzay Tarishal Mocher. It says that when you tip it over on the side, it belongs to the Mocher, Batanan, then we have a Mishnah, Irkino, Mitzah Arizeh Zuchuma. When it comes to the Kalein, and you make something Truma, you say this barrel will be Truma on all the other barrels here. So then when you go ahead and make that barrel Truma, afterwards you let the barrel lie on its side. And this is after you've given the Kalein everything that was in the barrel. You gave him all the Truma, you let him leave it on the side. That which is left over is considered Truma. So that sounds it belongs to the Lokeach. So how could you say it belongs to the Mocher? Over here we're talking about two different issues. When we're talking about Mekach Umemkar, when you're dealing with transactions, then Yeush is relevant. Yeush is relevant because the buyer can determine at which point he says, I got enough. So when you're talking about the buyer says, I'm not waiting around to get the rest of this barrel. So therefore there's Yeush, he gives up hope, and it belongs to the, right, belongs to the Mocher. When it comes to Truma, there's no issue of Yeush over here. Truma is Truma. No matter where it is, it's Truma. If it's Truma, you gotta give it to the Kohen. No matter if the Kohen gave up hope of getting it, it's still Truma. If it's Truma, you gotta give it to the Kohen in the end because it's still Truma, even if the Kohen doesn't say, I want it or I need it. I mean, it's not the coin's choice of whether it's truma or not. The determination of truma is because you made the barrel truma and everything that's inside of it becomes truma. The coin accepts or gets the truma, but the fact that something is assigned truma has nothing to do with the coin. It has to do with what you call truma. You called this barrel truma. Everything in this barrel is truma, no matter what the coin thinks. Right. The coin is irrelevant to the picture because the coin is just the recipient of the truma. He's not the determinant of what is truma or not truma. He simply gets it. So whatever is truma, you must give to the kohen. Now what is truma? Everything in this barrel. That includes anything that's left over afterwards. Now we're asking the question, Rabbi Yehuda. What is Rabbi Yehuda addressing over here? Is Rabbi Yehuda talking about the reisha? When he say, Chayav latif shlosh tipim, le'olam, you always have to let three drips come along. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that when it comes to Erev Shabbos, you're not chayav to do the three drips. That's one possibility. So Rabbi Yehuda is coming to be mekil over there. Because everybody, the other people say that you always have to put three drips. And Rabbi Yehuda says, not on Erev Shabbos, samuch l'cheshika, you don't have to give three drips. Or is he talking about the seifa, in the case where the chenvani does not have to give three drips? Is he modifying that and saying that, yeah, truth? The chenveni doesn't have to give three drips, but that's only when it's close to Shabbos. Otherwise, the chenveni does have to give the three drips. And the Gemara says, "Uluchomer tashma the tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer erev Shabbos shemesecha chenveni patur mipnei shechenveni tahur." So there's the answer that Rabbi Yehuda is the chumra, and he's saying that a chenveni is only patur from giving the three drips when it's right before Shabbos. Then you can say the chenveni is under pressure to get out of there, right? Then he's under pressure, and you can say he doesn't give three drips. When he's dealing with other customers, that's part of his job. It's part of his job is to ensure that all the customers get what they need, and that's giving them the three drops. So that's part of his service. When it's close to Shabbos, then you could say that it's not he's not entitled to it. He's not entitled, or he can't wait around. It's not reasonable to ask him to wait. All right, next. Someone sends his son to the storekeeper. We're going to go here with the Girsa Rashbam. The Girsa Rashbam is Pundion Biyado. He sends him with a Pundion is worth 2 Isar. So he sends his son to the Chenvani to buy something, and he gives him a Pundion. When he goes there, Madalo bi Isar Shemen, but not to know it to Isar. So basically, he wants, with this Pundion, he wants to purchase 1 Isar worth of Shemen. So what does the Chenvani do? He gives him Shemen worth an Isar, and he hands him back change of an Isar. Because that's what he gave. Give him a full pundion, which is worth 2 isar. Gives him an isar of shem, isar of change. Shabarat asochit, vavarat isar. The child on his way home breaks the pitcher that the oil's in and loses the change. Chenvani chayav. The chenvani is responsible for that. Rabbi Yehuda puter. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, he's patur. Shemanat kein shochol. Because that's why he sent them over there. We'll see what this all means in the Gemara. Omodim lechachamim leRabbi Yehuda. The chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda. Bezman shatolchit biyad atinok. That if when the chenvani is pouring the oil into the pitcher, that it, the tinok's holding it. Umadar chenvani letocha shechenvani patur. In that case, the chenvani is patur. Right now, let's understand what's going on here. Bishlama, the Gemara says, Bishlama bi isar v'shemen b'haplige. When it comes to the isar and the shemen, this is what they're arguing about. The Rabbanan savre leodie shadre. The Rabbanan believe when you send a child to the store with a pundion, right, you are basically indicating to the storekeeper or sending him a message that I'd like to purchase these items. That's what you're doing. You're sending simply a message. What you're not telling him is, use my kid to send the stuff back. All you're saying is, please send home to me a Isar with a Shemen and an Isar and change, not with my kid. But Rabbi Yehuda Sabar, the Shturei Leishtadrei. Why else did he send the kid with the money? And that's to indicate to him, send it back with my kid. My kid is now the messenger. You made him the shliach. So if he operates as the shliach, you're patur. The problem is, Ela Shavar Tzlochit, Aveda Midati. The Tzlochit is clearly Aveda Midat. Why? Because who did he send the picture with? He sent the picture with the kid. So since he sent the picture with the kid, even if he's saying to the storekeeper, send it back with someone else, but the fact that you sent the picture with the kid is a aveda midat. If it's aveda midat, then you can't make a claim or you can't obligate the chenvani to pay for the picture. Because when you sent the picture with the kid, even if you're sending the kid to indicate to the storekeeper that's what you want, nevertheless, when the picture is sent with him, that still makes the kid a shliach to bring the picture to the chenvani. He's a shliach to bring the picture to the chenvani. When does the chenvani take possession of the picture? He never really takes possession of the picture. So Amar Rav Hoshea, that's not a bramacha, but balabayit mocher tzlochiot askinen. Talking about where the balabayit, the father of this child, is actually a pitcher seller or a some sort of kli, you know, tzlochid seller. And it's here, the chenvani picks it up to look to see if he's willing to buy this tzlochit. Ukanishmoel has a din like Shmuel. What's the din of Shmuel? Damar Shmuel, notel klim b'irin ha'uman, amrat vakro. Person tells a utensil from a person to look at it. V'ne'enas b'yado chayav, and you are ne'enas, you're chayav. Because once you take the kli into your possession, that makes it, or when you take it in to look at it, the underlying assumption is what? That you have now are responsible for the item. You're responsible for the item into, again, this is the Rashbam points out here, it's the kitzei demea. The price is already set. And you take a look at it. You want to look to see if it's good. Right? At that point in time, you become the owner of the item. You have a right of return, which is you have a right to return it and not buy it. But once you've taken it, since we have fixed the price, you have it in your hand, the underlying assumption is a la rove, you're going to keep it. Since a la rove, you're going to keep it, you're responsible with it, it's in your hands, but you're also responsible to get it back to me because a return, you have the right of return, but the right of return is now from your possession to me. So if it's from the right possession to you, that's why the chenvani becomes responsible for the item over here. The kid's bringing the pitcher. You're right. As long as the kid has the pitcher, he's not responsible. Now he hands it to the storekeeper. The storekeeper takes it. He's doing it on the assumption he's going to keep the pitcher now and use it. So once he takes possession of it, even though he has a right of return, it becomes his. If it becomes his, now when he sends that pitcher back with the kid, he becomes responsible for the pitcher as well because it's now his pitcher. Until it reaches the father, if he wants to return, or if he's bought it, then it's his.
Alright,
so that's the Gemara.
If it's cotton, then
he can't
be
marked. Alright, so we have to ask, what does it mean? What exactly does that mean? And then we'll get, the Gemara is going to reject this answer. But it's a good question about it. Why is this not, what is he responsible for in this case? Alright, I'll leave it because tomorrow we're going to get to more of that Sukkah. Gemara says, if that's the case, let's say that the statement of Shmuel is a machlokas tanaim, the tanaim in our Mishnah. So the Gemara doesn't like that. It's the other way around. The storekeeper is the one selling pitchers over here. Each one is upholding their own position. What does that mean? That means that, according to Rabbanan, why was the kid sent? The kid was sent to tell the owner that I want you to send home things to me. Not with my kid, but send it home. Therefore, if the chenvani who also sells pitchers sends home the pitcher with the kid, he's doing the wrong thing. Therefore, when it all breaks to the chenvani because it's his pitcher. Now, on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says when you send the kid, you mean send it back with my child. So that means if you send it back with my child, you know that he has to send the oil in something. He's going to send it back in a pitcher. If he sends it back in the pitcher, you're responsible for the pitcher that he sends it back in. So that's what they suggest. Gemara says, Yachim is seifa. Then what are you going to do with the seifa? Mudim chachim in the tinok. That when the tzlochit is in the hands of tinok, madad chenvani the tochash, chenvani patur. Chenvani patur. What's the kid doing with the pitcher? If the owner of the pitcher, the seller of the pitchers, is the chenvani, why does the child have a pitcher? Now, if the child got the pitcher because the chenvani gave it to him, then that's the ratio. That's machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan. Why did the Rabbanan agree to Rabbi Yehuda in a case where the child is holding the pitcher? The child only has a pitcher because his father gave it to him. That's why it would be a veda midah. But that's not the case here because he's not the seller. The pitcher is owned by the mocher. So Amar Doduye Shadre, you said that he was sent over just to tell him what to do. What's the case here? That the case here is that he took it to measure the oil out. It belongs to the buyer, the tzolchit. But the chenvani takes it to use, not to take possession of it, but simply to measure with it, to measure out how much he's supposed to give to him. That's like Rabbi Shito, Dama Rabba, Hekisha, Nitchayev Bo. That when Rabbi says that when you go ahead and take an animal, to take possession of an animal, if you hit it, to move it out of the way or to move it, that's a kinyan over there. That's a kinyan mishicha. So same thing over here. Gemara says, Imur Dama Rabba, Bale Chayim, Dan Kintno, Nigra, Braita. Wait a minute. When you hit the animal starts to run. So therefore, what does he do? He gets used to leaving. He knows that he's going to leave here. He's going to run away again. So the fact that you hit it makes you responsible for it. Okay, hi, Gavna Mi Omar. Over here, the fact that the individual took the pitcher to measure with, why does that make him all of a sudden the owner of the pitcher? There's no such kinyan over here. He didn't make a kinyan in order to take possession of it. Right? All he did was he wants to use it for, right? All he wants to do with it is use it to measure in it. So when he took it from there, all he did, that's what he took. He took it to measure. That was the intention when the Baal Bayit sent it, to measure into this, pour into this, and he gives it back to him. Over there, he hasn't given him any possession, or hasn't taken possession of it. So we'll have to come with another answer that we'll continue with tomorrow about what exactly the answer is over here. Now, just to note that there's also another problem here, that when the father sends the money with the kid, that's also aveda midat. The fact that he sends the picture with the kid, okay. But once he sends the money is also aveda midat when he sends it with the kid. So why isn't that the Gemara's question? The Rashi says because once the chenvani takes the money into his hands, right there he clearly accepts the money. When he hands it back the isar, the change in the tzlochit, then it's obviously not being treated as aveda midat anymore. When it's the picture itself, you can say that the chenvani never took possession of it. But when he's talking about money and then he's doing the exchange, he's giving back change, and he's handing him a tzlochit, it's clear over there that he's already taking possession of the money, and it's no longer an aveda midat because he's transacting with that money. And the fact that he's transacting with this money is an indication that he's not viewing it as an aveda midat. He said that the child was sent to indicate to the owner to do something, but to send it back with the responsible party. So now, when you send it back with an irresponsible party, true, maybe the pundion was aveda midat, and I don't deserve my pundion back. But now, when you sent me an isar and the shemen back, you sent it with my kid, and you did it the wrong way, and you owe me that money. So you have to replace whatever you were sending to me, you got to replace it now. Because that's what you were saying. Maybe I was wrong in sending the pundion with my kid. But my kid was only there to tell you what to do. Now when you do it, don't do the right thing, and you don't send it, you send it back to my kid. Now you're the problem. I'm no longer the problem. The problem's ended at that point in time. We see that over here with the pitcher too. Once it's removed from the hands of the kid, right, then it's not the kid's problem anymore. Even though by sending it with the kid was wrong, nevertheless, once the chenvani takes possession of it, then already it becomes the chenvani's issue. Right, that's one last thing. And then the last thing is this, a kli from a Beit Uman, right, to check it out, and it's Nanas, he's chayav. Why are you chayav for onsen in that case? So the Tosu says that the reason you're chayav for onsen is because you're a shoel, you're a borrower. By taking it into your possession, you become a borrower, and looking at it, you become a borrower. If you're a borrower, then you're chayav in onsen until you return it. Now, on the way back, when you send it back, you might only be a socher. But when you have it in your possession, you are a shoel. That's the way the Tosus learns it. Although he quotes Rashi from Bava Metzia, says the reason you're an onis over here is because you become a lokeach. You're a buyer at that point in time. Once you've taken it into your possession, you are the buyer. And therefore, that's why you're chayim in onsin until you return it. Until you return it is because, right, you are owned it and you have a right of return. It's an ownership with a right of return rather than simply being a shoel and a borrower of the item until you return it. All right, we'll stop over here.